welcome to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold. Carol Gold is an inspirational speaker, author, change agent, and former family law attorney who helps individuals and organizations by providing guidance and encouragement during periods of professional and personal change. Her fearlessness in facing challenges head-on is contagious, inspiring, and uplifting, and she understands the importance of the principles of personal responsibility and adaptability within the larger context of our connection to one another. Engaging and empowering, Carol brings the highest message to all concerned and leaves her audiences with renewed determination to be the best they can be as she explores the topics of ethics, mission, purpose, intuition, stress management, and relationships. Carol's recently released book, The Lightworker's Handbook, A Spiritual Guide to Eliminating Fear, serves as a simple explanation and user-friendly guide to navigating the changes taking place around us. Her mission is to give people a renewed sense of empowerment and excitement about the possibilities that await them regardless of their present situations. Carol's goal is not that you see things her way, but rather to help you find your way. To learn more, visit her website at carolgold.com. That's carolegold.com. To speak with Carol right now, call 856-227-1360. That's 856-227-1360. And now, here's Carol. Good morning. This is An Hour of Gold, and I am Carol Gold. You're listening to WNJC 1360 AM. I hope wherever you are this morning, you have what I have here in South Jersey, which is a beautiful sunny day. And if for some reason, wherever you are, it isn't, just go inside and look for the sun that's inside your heart, since I happen to believe that we all have that opportunity to access that sunshine within ourselves. I had a show planned today, which when I got up this morning, I had a whole new opening for the show, thanks to Rush Limbaugh and what he said yesterday on his show. And I want to thank him for what he said yesterday on his show, because it's an amazing lead-in to what I want to do here today. And it's also a great juxtaposition for the position that I was going to talk to you about anyway this morning, which is the imbalance in our lives, the imbalance in the world that we live in, the imbalance within our relationships, our personal lives, professional lives, and also the imbalance within ourselves. So why did I choose to talk about this morning, and why did Rush Limbaugh's comments of yesterday help me lead into the show this morning? Well, the reason that I decided to talk about imbalance this morning is because I happened to listen over the weekend to This Week with Christiana Anandpour. And she had in one of her segments three guests. She had Claire Shipman, who is a journalist and with ABC, television journalist, who's the wife of Jay Carney. Jay Carney is the current White House press secretary. She also had on a woman named Cecilia Attias, who's the founder of the Attias Foundation for Women, and who is the former wife of President Nicolas Sarkozy of France. And the final guest was Tori Clark. Tori Clark is a communications consultant who's served in several private sector positions and also served for three presidential administrations. She was probably most notably the Assistant of Defense for Public Affairs under Donald Rumsfeld in the Bush administration. And the reason she had these three women on was because Christiana Anandpour did a segment long overdue. And the segment was called Sex and Politics. And the particular perspective that she was bringing to this segment was the absence of women in both political positions of high political office and positions of private sector administration of companies, and the effect that the absence of women has on the actual functioning of whether it's government or the private sector. I say it was long overdue because this really is a conversation that we need to have globally, actually, and it's the balance between male and female energies. what happened on this week with Christiana Anampur is that the segment was, number one, too short. But again, we're talking about TV and we're talking about where they think the listening audience is and how popular a topic is. But it was a beginning. It was too short, but it was a beginning. And because it was too short, you got a lot of one-liners, or you got a lot of, you know, 10-second sound bites that really didn't go to the depth of what this topic needs. And of course, here on radio, we have the luxury of taking it a little deeper, going it a little broader. And that's what I'm going to try to do here today on this matter of bringing balance between male and female energies to everything we do. And so some of what was said during that segment, and I'm going there because Rush Limbaugh wound up responding to something that was particularly said during the segment, and that was what was said by Claire Shipman. Claire Shipman wrote a book called Womenomics, and she was citing in the segment on this week, on Sunday, she was citing some particular statistics and study results that I guess she had raised in her book. I have not read the book. That she either raised in her book or just generally came to the television show with. And the statistics, some of which she mentioned, were that between 2002 and 2008, there were half a dozen studies done that show that the more females there are in executive positions, the more money companies make. And particularly she cited studies that looked at female hedge fund operators, managers, who doubled their profits. The funds that were administered by female hedge fund managers doubled the profits of the funds that were managed by men. And also an economist at the University of Michigan who had done a diversity and decision-making study concluded that diversity leads to better decisions. Now, what Rush Limbaugh responded to, and in a moment I just want to go into what Tori Clark said and also what Cecilia Attias brought to the program, but what Rush Limbaugh was responding to was this notion that just because you have women in a position of power, you're going to necessarily have a better outcome, which was, some could say it was the impression given by the segment on this week. And in particular, Christiana Anampur, and both she and I believe Tori Clark, spoke about a woman named Christine Lagarde. Christine Lagarde is an attorney and a very famous antitrust attorney who was with a chief international law firm. She was the female chairman, actually, of the international law firm of Baker & McKenzie. And she is the current leading candidate to head the IMF. The IMF, you will remember, is now looking for a leader, thank you to Dominique Strauss-Kahn, who is one of the recent poor examples of what happens when testosterone runs amok, no pun intended. And that's actually what Rush Limbaugh was speaking to, because in citing Lagarde's comments, she has been noted as saying that in all of her experience, she's had a tremendous amount of both private and public sector experience, women bring, quote, less libido, less ego to the table. And there was a reference to a Cambridge University study that said that they actually found that bond traders, when taking risk, when taking high risk in high risk bond trades, actually register higher testosterone levels. So they're correlating male aggressive behavior or male risk behavior, high risk behavior, with high testosterone levels, high testosterone levels. And this was, you get the gist of what that segment was like if you didn't listen to it. And so I want to make the point again. The segment was too brief, unable to explore the depth and the breadth of what this subject matter needs. And because it was shallow, you know, as I see it, the word that I choose, it was certainly not in the deep end. Rush Limbaugh came back with a counterpoint. And his counterpoint was to use Anthony Weiner as his poster child. Poor choice, but his nonetheless. And what he was saying about Weiner was that the problem with Anthony Weiner isn't Anthony Weiner. The problem with Anthony Weiner are the women who he has been exposed to all of his adult life, quote unquote, because he has been exposed, according to Rush Limbaugh, to liberal feminazi, which is Rush Limbaugh's favorite expression when he talks about left-wing politically active women, women feminazis who have given him, meaning Anthony Weiner, who have emasculated him or attempted to emasculate him through their political and their social viewpoints, and therefore his act is an act of rebellion. His photographing his genitals and sending them across Twitter and across the internet and whatever other means by which he chose to disseminate his physique is the result of his own emasculation due to his exposure to the very women who Rush Limbaugh would argue, Claire Shipman and Christiane Amanpour and Tori Clark and Attias from France are holding up as the solution to our problem. So what do we have here? We have two extremes responding, or at least one throwing a salvo and the other one sending another one back across the bow, each one taking an extreme position. I will tell you up front that I'm not an advocate of Rush Limbaugh's. I know he is the primo guy on this in this profession that I'm in. I know that he is the granddaddy, so to speak, of talk radio, and I realize that he blazed a lot of trails for an awful lot of people who had an easier road after him. However, that doesn't ever give anybody the right, because they have a bully pulpit and they have a position of power and they've established themselves, to do something. I think in many ways he is part of the ongoing problem of the complete breach that exists between male and female energies, because despite the fact that he recently remarried for I don't know which time, I think he's on his third or whatever, because he's recently remarried to a very attractive younger woman who seems like a lovely human being, I only know him as my exposure to him, which is listening to him on the radio. And in listening to him on the radio, I find him way too frequently disparaging and condescending of women. I think he loves that whole sport jock male thing that he does. He's obviously very involved with sports teams, almost owned an NFL team himself last year. And it's a big deal for him, his golf tournaments and his locker room stuff. It's a big deal. And so one could argue that his testosterone level is certainly up at the higher end of the spectrum too, except I don't really want to go there because I don't think that's a productive argument. I don't think either the accusation that the world is a mess because there are no women in positions of power, at least not significant numbers of them, I don't think that's any more of a productive argument than it is to say that women who aspire to positions of power are part of the problem or are the cause of the problem. I think that both extreme, or that those women ought to be home raising children exclusively. I think when we live in a world of extremes and a world of black and white and a world of dilemma, and if you'll remember, I spoke about dilemmas and tetralemmas in a prior show, and if you don't, when I come back from break, I'm going to refresh your recollection, because the solution to our problem, all of our problems going forward, is not one of polarity and extremes. It's one of balance and finding that place where everyone can make the highest contribution to the total picture's highest good. So when I come back from commercial, I'll do a brief review of dilemmas and tetralemmas and keep going on this issue of what Rush Limbaugh said, of what Christiane Amanpour covered on this week, and on how we go about resolving this problem in our everyday lives and globally. Be right back.
Stefano's Ristorante Italiano of Mount Laurel, New Jersey, serves the finest authentic Sicilian cuisine with exciting dishes and a unique ambiance. At Stefano's, every dish is created using only the freshest, finest ingredients. Their delicious menu options and attention to detail create a truly enjoyable dining experience. For more than 20 years, chef and owner Paola Balsamo has presented her authentic family recipes to South Jersey. Stefano's features traditional Italian favorites and unique dishes wrapped in a cozy ambiance. They cater to special requests and offer a celiac specialty menu featuring gluten-free foods that are so delicious you'll never believe they're gluten-free. They also have a large variety of delicious pizza. Please feel free to bring a bottle of wine to enjoy with your meal. And if you're hosting a party, Stefano's offers on-site and off-site catering options. Their catering menu offers many options to please any taste, and their impeccable service ensures your event will be one to remember. They cater corporate functions, as well as birthdays, graduations, anniversaries, and many other special occasions. Stefano's Ristorante Italiano at 3815 Church Road in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Open at 11 a.m. Monday through Saturday, closed Sunday. Call 856-778-3663. That's 856-778-3663. And visit their website, stefanosristoranteitaliano.com, and mention an hour of gold to receive a 10% discount. You're listening to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold. To speak with Carol right now, call 856-227-1360. That's 856-227-1360. And now let's get back to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold.
Hi, welcome back. It's Carol again here at Carol Gold.
You're listening to An Hour
at An Hour of Gold. Remember, you can listen on the web, as I just started to say, at carolgold.com, carolegold.com. That's my website. Click on the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, or go to the radio page and just click on Listen Live. For those of you around the world listening, that's your best way to access An Hour of Gold. I'm picking back up where I just ended right before the break, which is talking about Rush Limbaugh's response to the segment that Christine Anampour did this Sunday on This Week, and it was a segment on the need for more women to be in positions of authority. Rush Limbaugh responded by saying that that's oftentimes the cause of the problem, and that one of the problems with women seeking authority is the emasculation of men since the beginning of the feminist movement. And he used Anthony Weiner as his example for an emasculated man who's been surrounded by left-wing liberal activist women all of his life, and therefore emasculated and seeking to strike out and reassert himself by sending his genitals, or at least representation of his genitals, thank God, across the internet. And I'm talking about the absurdity of both of those positions. You know, it's not a matter of gender. It's a matter of competency. It doesn't really matter what gender someone is. It matters that they're competent for the job they're trying to achieve. So the first fallacy in setting up a false premise on whether it's men or women, or one is better than the other, or which one belongs in positions of power, is the false premise of gender has a relevancy in all of that. It doesn't. When you're trying to get a job done, you want the most competent person for the job. And it doesn't really matter what they are or what height they are or what gender they are. It matters the skill that they can bring to the need of the moment. And that's really just an obvious and surface response to the gender argument. But there's a deeper and more profound problem here, and this problem goes back thousands of years. It actually goes back probably tens of thousands of years. And before I go there, and I plan to go there in some depth because I think that's the discussion we as a society need to have, I just want to go over why this either or, them or us, black or white, male or female dilemma, one of two choices, is such a dangerous argument and place for us to be in. When you say it's this or that, when you say it's one or the other, you're setting up an adversarial situation. You're setting up a competitive situation, and you're setting up a situation where one person has to win and one person has to lose, or one side has to win and one side has to lose. And the danger further in that is that when you have a victor and when you have a vanquished, the vanquished may, for the moment, no longer be a problem. But inevitably, the vanquished come back to be a problem because people harbor feelings of resentment and feelings of loss when they have been vanquished. And it may be instant, it may be a week, it may be a month, it may be a generation. But sooner or later, when someone's dignity, when someone's integrity has been compromised to the point that they lose self-esteem, they harbor that, and that comes back to haunt the person or the organization or the country that did that. We have endless examples of this in world history, and it's been proven time and time again, and yet we don't seem to learn the lesson. We do not seem to learn the lesson that when you conquer someone and defeat them and decimate them as a population, you sow the seeds of future discontent and probably future aggression and therefore future war. And it's an endless cycle. So what's the alternative to a dilemma? What's the alternative to it's this way or it's that way? Well, the alternative is something I've talked about in the past and probably will continue to talk about. And it's a tetralemma. A tetralemma has four possible outcomes, not two, not either this or that. A tetralemma says you can have this, or you can have that, or you can have both, or you can have neither. And without going in on this particular show, because I've done it in the past and will again if necessary, but without going into the depth of each one of those four, suffice it to say that when you have those four options, what you do is you open up much more possibility for coming up with creative solutions that are outside the box because you have a broader field. It isn't just one or the other. And I gave an example of, you know, the third one is if it isn't one or it isn't the other, well, then it can be both. And I gave a lengthy example in another show. I'll repeat it real quickly here. My daughter's prom dress story. She was going to the prom recently. She saw a dress. She liked it. It was too much money. I didn't want to buy it. I bought her another dress. She looked equally lovely in. But then I had guilt because she really loved that first dress. So I bought it for her. And now she had two. And she was having a dilemma over which dress to wear. And ultimately, I suggested to her she wear both, that she wear one to the pre-prom event and then change and wear the other to the dance because one was actually suited to the dance more than the other, gave her more freedom of movement, etc. And I used it. She was so excited. I used it as a teaching moment because I said to her, Zoe, here's the difference between a dilemma and a tetralemma. So hopefully I'm not just here preaching to many people that I may never meet in person. I actually teach this stuff and live it in my own life. So I don't bring you anything I don't believe in and try to live myself, which is why I want to share with you now an amazing book that I read not too long ago called The Chalice and the Blade by Rhianne Eisler. And the book is just so timely in light of the Christiana Amanpour this week's segment and the response by Rush Limbaugh. Because while each of them were setting up the dilemma, The Chalice and the Blade is a phenomenally interesting historical look at the evolution of values and male-female contributions to societies going back thousands of years. Actually going back prehistory. What does prehistory mean? Well, history is our recorded history. History is from the point at which writing was invented and man, humankind, was able to record through alphabet the history of what was occurring. But prior to that, we have what's called prehistory. And prehistory goes all the way back to the Paleolithic period, all the way back to probably far back as 9,000 BC or BCE, depending on how you look at the division on the calendar. But the year CE, okay? We're looking at pre-Christian history and then post-Christian history. BC is the Christian calendar. BCE is the Hebrew calendar. Talking about the same date in history. What happens when you look back? And how do we look back? Well, you look back through archaeological finds. You look back through carbon dating and what has been discovered archaeologically in terms of symbolism on cave walls, archaeological artifacts that have been unearthed, statues, pottery, all sorts of things that have been discovered archaeologically that have allowed us to construct how societies functioned, were organized, and ended in our prehistorical period. So, what we know, which is fascinating to me, is that Rhian Eisler calls it a dominator culture. What is a dominator culture versus a partnership culture? Well, a partnership culture is the name that she gives to almost every single society that has been discovered archaeologically in the prehistorical period. So we're talking about pre-Hebrew, pre-Judeo-Christian history. What we know from the Neolithic Age, which is roughly 6,000 to 3,000 BCE, what we know is that all of those eras, all of those cultures, all of those societies are marked by goddess worship. All of the archaeological finds that have been brought up indicate statues and symbolism indicating a divine feminine worship. Now, what's fascinating about this is also all of those societies, all of the artifacts, everything we have learned is that they were peace-loving societies. They didn't have symbolism for aggression and war. In the cave drawings, in the artifacts, in the sculpting, in the pottery, there are no indications of weaponry. There is no indication of aggression. There are no heroic figures that have vanquished anyone else. These were peace-loving societies, peace-loving agrarian societies. And so the one common feature in those thousands of years that predated the Judeo-Christian evolution of religion, the one common factor in all of them is that God appears to have been a woman. God appears to have been a woman to those societies, and they were peace-loving. And there was no domination of the male by the female. Even though the female was the worship deity, all indications are that men and women had equal parity and respect for one another. There was no gender inequality. Gender inequality is something that we have been taught is part of human nature. It's not part of human nature. It's what was instituted through the use of fear, when male-dominant societies began to emerge with the Judeo-Christian evolution of a structured society based upon a male figurehead. One of the most fascinating pieces of information that I remember out of that book, and it's minor but it's major in my mind, is that why do priests and even rabbis on high holy days and mullahs in Islam, why do they all wear long robes? Why are these men all dressed in long robes to the floor? Anybody ever, did you ever ask yourself that question? Well, the answer is because they took over cultures and societies that were female worshipers, female dominant. The priestesses wore dresses. They wore long robes. When the male dominant societies began to take over, the men dressed like the women. They dressed in long robes so as to transition the populace into getting comfortable with a male in the position of where females had previously been. So I want to go into this a little more after break. I want to talk a little bit more about the role of men and women in society, where we got out of balance, how we get back into balance, and why it's got a whole lot more to do with left or right, liberal or conservative, Republican or Democrat, or whether a male or a woman is in a position of authority. We're going to be right back talking about balance and bringing it into your life, my life, the nation's life, and hopefully the life of the globe right after this break.
You're listening to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold. Carol Gold is an inspirational speaker, author, change agent, and former family law attorney who helps individuals and organizations by providing guidance and encouragement during periods of professional and personal change. Her fearlessness in facing challenges head-on is contagious, inspiring, and uplifting, and she understands the importance of the principles of personal responsibility and adaptability within the larger context of our connection to one another. Engaging and empowering, Carol brings the highest message to all concerned and leaves her audiences with renewed determination to be the best they can be as she explores the topics of ethics, mission, purpose, intuition, stress management, and relationships. Carol's recently released book, The Lightworker's Handbook, A Spiritual Guide to Eliminating Fear, serves as a simple explanation and user-friendly guide to navigating the changes taking place around us. Her mission is to give people a renewed sense of empowerment and excitement about the possibilities that await them regardless of their present situations. Carol's goal is not that you see things her way, but rather to help you find your way. To learn more, visit her website at carolgold.com. That's CAROLE gold.com. To speak with Carol right now, call 856-227-1360. That's 856-227-1360. And now let's get back to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold.
Hi, welcome back to An Hour of Gold. You're listening to WNJC 1360 AM, talking about men, women, balance of power, and particularly in the context of Rush Limbaugh's response to Christiane Amanpour's segment on This Week, this past Sunday, on sex and politics and the role that women play in administering both businesses and in holding public office and having power in whatever position they be in within their careers. Tori Clark, when she was on This Week, Tori Clark was talking about parity, that she would like to see parity between men and women. And when she was saying parity, she was talking about a level of equality, but she made the point that she wants to see parity, but she doesn't want to see women acting like men. She wasn't talking about that kind of parity. So I will tell you a personal experience that I've had in my own professional life. What I noticed, I went into law in my late 30s, and what I noticed was that most of the women that I encountered who were practicing law, who were successful at what they were doing, particularly women who were either sole practitioners or who were in a small firm, small firm, large firm, sole practitioner, it didn't really matter. If they were successful, they were pretty much acting like men. And it really bothered me because I thought, my gosh, they've gotten this far and they've gotten into these positions of power or positions of influence. Why in the world would you then turn around and become like part of the problem? Because law was a male club. I mean, law was always an all-male club for a very long time. And when women finally broke into that profession, it was, I thought somewhere it would have been with the hope to impact it positively and not add to the problem. But the women really became part of the boys' club. And it was one thing that I tried not to do when I practiced law. I tried not to be part of the problem. I tried not to sort of smoke and drink and golf and and do all the things that the guys did so that I could be accepted. And in many ways, it adversely affected my career because while I was successful as an attorney, and I was economically successful, and I was reputation-wise successful, if there is such a thing, if that's even an English phrase, couple words I can put together, I had a good reputation is a better way to say it. I had it, and I made the money that I made because I worked really hard, I was always prepared, and I was ready to fight the good fight whenever it had to be fought. I didn't settle for the sake of settling so that I could either compromise my client or because I was afraid to go into a courtroom. And so I did okay because I did my homework and I stepped up when I needed to. I didn't do okay because I was politically connected. And to be politically connected, you had to play the game. And the game was a male game, and I wasn't going to play that game. And so when Tori Clark talks about parity, the responsibility that's on women who have the ability to ascend to positions of authority, be they in the public or private sector, the responsibility that's on us is to bring unique qualities and characteristics to the job that are rightfully, naturally, and divinely uniquely female. You see, there are such things. There are qualities and characteristics that are uniquely male, and there are those that are uniquely female. And while Rush Limbaugh and perhaps Claire Shipman like to frame it in terms of either, in Limbaugh's case, you know, it's a feminazi emasculation of men since the feminist movement began, which is now why we're in the mess we're in. Or it's Claire Shipman saying, you know, women can't get into these positions of authority and need to, and we need to have more women just for the sake of having women. No, that's not the bigger challenge, and that's not the highest message. The highest message is this. Everything in nature has its own qualities and characteristics that it brings to what it is. Whether it's a flower or it's an animal or it's a human being, we all come with unique characteristics. And within those unique characteristics, it can even be broken down, generally speaking, by gender. I'm not addressing an entire separate subject, which is whether someone's gay because they've chosen to be, or it's a lifestyle, or it's a genetic predisposition, or it's nature. I'm not going there. For the moment, I'm just talking about traditional male-female gender issues, and I'm saying this. It's not about aggression or non-aggression. It's about the following. We all have a nature that is uniquely ours. The male nature is to be an aggressor. It comes from, yes, testosterone. And I'll tell you what, if a woman has too much of it in her body, she's aggressive. It's got nothing to do with being male. It's got to do with a chemical structure within the body, and it's real. And you can give a woman an aggressive, warlike, competitive disposition by having her take too much testosterone. And any woman who's on a hormonal replacement program will tell you that. It's a fine balance that has to be struck. It happens that naturally, the way it was designed, men have more testosterone than women. And that is for a survival function. It's there for a reason. It is their nature. And when it was needed to fight off the marauding bands of whoever they were, and the dinosaurs and the tigers and the lions, it served a very functional survival purpose. It's less needed so now. However, it still remains a man's nature. His biochemistry is telling him to be an aggressor. That's the fact. Now, women. Women are naturally more emotionally in touch with what they feel. It is their chemical composition and makeup as well. Whether it's connected to estrogen, I can't tell you, but I can tell you, probably, because any woman will tell you that at certain times of the month, she is more emotional. So I assume that our emotions are tied to our estrogen, the way males' aggressiveness is tied to their testosterone. Here's the issue. You know, I studied Kabbalah briefly many years ago, Jewish mysticism. And one of the things my teacher said to me was, if it's your nature, it doesn't count. If it's your nature, you have to overcome it. You're born with a nature, and your nature is what you have to challenge yourself against. It's like gifts. If you're born with gifts, if you're born a musical genius, there's no There's no struggle to that. Barbra Streisand didn't have to study for years and do all kinds of training to get the voice she got. She got it from God. So it's her birthright. So there's no wonderfulness in that voice. What she does with it, what she did with it in her lifetime is what matters. What doesn't come easy to us, what is not a gift or doesn't come to us naturally, is what we have to struggle with and what we have to grow. That's where our real growth comes from. You always feel good when you do something that you couldn't do when you started. You always feel good when you excel at something that it took you a while to get good at, okay? So it's the tough stuff where we get our self-respect and our self-esteem and we learn what we're capable of. The stuff that's easy doesn't matter. Well, guess what? Your nature is what comes easy to you, and my Kabbalah teacher said it's what you have to overcome. So if a man's nature is to be aggressive and a woman's nature is to be emotional, if we can work on that premise, then men need to overcome that aggression and women need to overcome that emotionalism, so that either one of those in the extreme, the unchecked testosterone acting out behavior or the unchecked emotional acting out behavior, are both equally as dangerous. They're both equally as dangerous, okay? And any couple in a relationship will tell you that, you know? If the guy's too aggressive or she's too emotional, he can't stand it because she's all over the place with her emotions, and she can't stand it because he's just too much like a gorilla, or like a, you know, he's too aggressive, whatever that is. Maybe in the guy it manifests itself as he's into porn, or he's into, you know, forcing himself upon her, or he's into being less than delicate in his relationships with his wife. That's the male aggressive testosterone stuff. That's the stuff the guy has to learn how to moderate, how to use wisely. And if she's screaming at him every single time he does something, if she's always in a high state of drama, okay, he can't stand that either, but that's her nature and that's what she has to overcome. And if those two in any relationship, be they personal, emotional, be they personal, professional, in any way, if males can learn to moderate the testosterone instinct and women can learn to moderate the emotional instinct, then they can meet side by side the way they were designed, each to bring their own gifts and their own blessings and their own unique contribution to come together to create something that's greater than either one of them could ever have created on their own, because we're not meant to live alone or we'd have a planet to ourselves. That's how we would have awakened. We would have awakened on a planet all by ourselves, and each one of us would have our own planet. But we don't, folks. We're here together. And so learning how to come together and bring our unique and separate gifts together is the answer. It's not per se about gender and accusations and polarity. It's about learning how to use what you have in moderation and in conjunction with someone else whose gifts and blessings are different than yours, but nonetheless are valuable, and who need to bring to the table what they have so you can bring to the table what you have, so you can both create a world where war is not the answer to everything. You know, every 60 seconds, 30 children die worldwide for lack of food or effective medication or inexpensive vaccines, and that poverty and hunger are primarily women and children's issues worldwide. Why? Because we live in a male dominator society for at least 2,000 years, and certainly longer, but let's just say for 2,000 years we've lived in a... No, let's go back further, because we go back all the way to the Torah. We go back to the Hebrew Bible, and we can go back 5,000 years and say we live in a male dominator society where the solution to everything is through aggression, and war is the cure, and money otherwise spent on nutrition and health and solutions that benefit all of humankind are spent on weaponry and are spent on war. That's our answer. Our answer isn't throwing darts at the other end of the spectrum to say, I'm not the problem, you are. The answer is understanding there's only one of us and we need to find common ground. I'll be right back after this commercial.
Stefano's Ristorante Italiano of Mount Laurel, New Jersey serves the finest authentic Sicilian cuisine with exciting dishes and a unique ambiance. At Stefano's, every dish is created using only the freshest, finest ingredients. Their delicious menu options and attention to detail create a truly enjoyable dining experience. For more than 20 years, chef and owner Paola Balsamo has presented her authentic family recipes to South Jersey. Stefano's features traditional Italian favorites and unique dishes wrapped in a cozy ambiance. They cater to special requests and offer a celiac specialty menu featuring gluten-free foods that are so delicious you'll never believe they're gluten-free. They also have a large variety of delicious pizza. Please feel free to bring a bottle of wine to enjoy with your meal. And if you're hosting a party, Stefano's offers on-site and off-site catering options. Their catering menu offers many options to please any taste, and their impeccable service ensures your event will be one to remember. They cater corporate functions, as well as birthdays, graduations, anniversaries, and many other special occasions. Stefano's Ristorante Italiano at 3815 Church Road in Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Open at 11 a.m. Monday through Saturday, closed Sunday. Call 856-778-3663. That's 778-3663. And visit their website, stefanosristoranteitaliano.com. And mention an hour of gold to receive a 10% discount. You're listening to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold. To speak with Carol right now, call 856-227-1360. That's 856-227-1360. And now let's get back to An Hour of Gold with Carol Gold.
Hi, welcome back. I was just talking off air with someone, and we were talking about what Rush Limbaugh said in response to Claire Shipman, and I want to give Rush Limbaugh his due, and that is that I understand on some level, however remote, what he was saying, and well, yeah, I do and I don't. You know, I understand what he was saying, but the way it was phrased only exacerbates the problem. Here's what I want to give him. In the 1980s, or I think that's when feminism probably, 70s, when feminism really rose its head. It rose its ugly head, I will say, because it was a reaction. Whenever a pendulum swings all the way in one direction, it has nowhere to go but to come back to the other extreme before it settles in the middle. So feminism was the inevitable reaction to the 5,000 years of male dominator society I'm talking about. The only way anyone was going to break through that wall, that brick wall established in it that had been built brick by brick for 5,000 years, was not to throw a pebble at it. It was to take a crane and a wrecking ball and smash a hole in it. That's what feminism did. It was its own extreme. I didn't even relate to females in my own era back then. I didn't understand what in the world they were talking about. It seemed so radical to me. In hindsight, I understand what they did and why they had to do it. But having done it, we are past the point of needing to continue to do it, and we are past the point of men needing to defend against it. We need to move into a different era where we both understand that together we have the solution. That's where we are in the moment. And by the way, you know, what we've been going through culturally, the technology, the rapid technology, and all of the chaos of the last 30 years that we have all lived through and are still living through now, it seems as, you know, it's a sudden rapid change. It's not a slow evolutionary change. 30 years is a blip in the scheme of history. It's almost non-recognizable. But when you look back at humankind, all change happened fast. all change happened quickly. But quickly in human history can be 100 years. It can take 100 years, but when you step back and you look at human history, how it evolves, 100 years is not a long period of time for something to change. So understand that we are living during one of these historical moments of rapid change that began probably in the 60s, when we can go back to, like, the Beatles are always the marker, you know, musically. But we're back to the 60s when racial issues and gender issues and issues of age, young versus old, and what young bring to the table, all of that emerged in the 60s. And it began then, and we're still living through it now. But we're in a new phase, and the phase, again, that we need to be in is this phase of balance, is to stop looking at polarities and extremes and accusing others and them versus us. It's not productive. You know, there's a great book called Getting to Yes, which most law students have to read, and when I took a course to become a mediator, I had to read it again. And there's one example in the book I've never forgotten because it's brilliant. Two sisters are arguing because they have one orange, and they both want the orange. They're fighting over this orange, and they're willing to kill each other over this orange. And finally, they decide to cut the orange in half, and each gets half of the orange, and neither one is happy. Why? Because one wanted the juice, and now she only has half of it, and the other wanted the rind so she could bake a pie. Had they not been at each other of me versus you, had they not looked at it as a dilemma, one could have had all the juice and one could have had all the rind. So when you come to conflict, before you get at positions, well, my position is this and your position is that and that's my position and that's your position, get at what is it you're really seeking? Because inevitably there's a way to work it out that's not an either-or situation. It's that tetralemma situation where you have more options than just the obvious this or that, black or white. What are some of the new ways we can do that? What are some of the ways that we can now look at balancing the world in a more productive way? Well, first of all, we have to remember that we all have the ability to act consciously and collectively. What does that mean? I always qualify when I use the word collective or I use the term oneness. I am not a socialist. I am not talking about a political solution. I am the opposite of a socialist. I believe in the individual above and all else. Above all else. But I'm talking about the ability for us to put our consciousnesses together and to collectively work on the highest good for everyone so that we begin to all think in a way that looks for solutions outside the box that benefits the most amount of people possible. Another way that we can begin to bring the world into balance, the power of prayer. You know, the power of prayer is scientifically documented. They have done controlled double-blind studies where they have had control groups pray for someone's health. They've had control groups pray for HIV-positive patients where one group being prayed for had HIV, one group not being prayed for had HIV, and the HIV patients who were prayed for had greater remission and longer lifespans than the group that wasn't prayed for. This is not some religious bent that I'm on, or it's some religious need. The power of prayer is the proper use of human consciousness. It's the way to use your mind in a positive way. It's to put your mind on the outcome you seek. And the more people who do that together, the more successful and more powerful the prayer, the more successful the outcome. Distance healing. There's documentation and scientific studies done on distance healing. People who sit and they try to affect a healing in a person who's at a distance. It's actually been done. It's documented. These are no longer mystical out there kinds of concepts. These are concepts that are now coming into line with discoveries in quantum physics that we know about the potential of human consciousness, what it can do. We use what? A fraction of our brains? Einstein was a genius. He used 10%. The average person uses 3%. If you're an average person and you're not Einstein, there's 90% of your brain that's not being used. We're learning now. We're learning how to use our brains more effectively. Remote viewing. Remote viewing is mind-boggling, but people, the Army uses it, has been using it for decades to sit people in rooms and have them see what's happening across the globe by giving them coordinates, longitude and latitude. They actually draw buildings almost to precise accuracy that are on the other side of the world. We've used it to find terrorists. We've used it to find targets to bomb. Remote viewing is a tool of the human mind that allows us to expand the positive way in which we use human consciousness. Geneticist Barbara McClintock, who was a 1993 Nobel Prize winner, said that if we look at human society as a living system, as if each one of us is one of its parts. You know, you look at your body, you get up in the morning, you have an arm, you have a leg. They don't operate in antagonism to one another. They don't act in opposition to one another. You're a success every day because you get your body parts to act in harmony with one another and all fulfill the goals you set out for it. Why don't we see humankind as a single body with multiple arms and legs? And just think what we could do if we acted more in concert, more in harmony with one another to bring the world more into balance. Dr. Jean Baker Miller, a psychiatrist and author, coined the phrase affiliation to talk about our interconnectedness to one another. And she talked about productive conflict. Productive conflict is what I was talking about earlier. It's using the tetralemma to think outside the box. It's using money for medicine and healing and food production as opposed to weaponry and war. Productive conflict to shift from dominator needs to male dominator, aggressive, high testosterone, you'll forgive me, Rush Limbaugh, needs to affiliation needs, to partnership needs, to needs that bring us more into balance, to affecting those needs instead. Or Jonas Salk, the discoverer of the polio vaccine. He was a medical researcher, he was a virologist, and Salk said there should be a science of empathy, where we bring reason and intuition together. Reason and intuition are the two sides of our brain, left and right brain. One is logical, rational, one is intuitive. Using our brain, bringing our brain into balance, bringing male-female into balance, both within ourself and in society. And finally, Gandhi, my favorite. Be the change you want to see in the world. That is his quote. He said there is something called the truth force, and that we should aim to transform conflict rather than to suppress it or rather than to explode it into violence. Be like Gandhi. Be the change you want to see in the world. Remember that the only real healing is a return to love. And remember, there is only one of us. Act accordingly this week. I'll see you here next Tuesday on WNJC 1360 AM. I'm Carol Gold, and this has been An Hour of Gold.